The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, July 15th, 2019.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, what a beautiful morning here in Sonoma County. I have to say, I had the most restful sleep last night, and I'm just feeling so energized. Anyway, I'm very excited about today's show. Joining me on the phone all the way from New York will be Dr. Harriet Fraud. Dr. Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She is a well-published author and writes about the pressures of families and the economics of the United States of America. She is also the founding member of the feminist movement and the journal Rethinking Marxism. For 40 years, she's been a radical committed to transforming U.S. personal and political life. And I'm always thrilled to have her on. She's also a regular on one of our shows called Economic Update with Dr. Richard Wolf, and we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later on. Well, it's been a real interesting month for sure. You know, as you know, Ken and I had a wonderful vacation up in Yosemite, and it's so interesting being back in the real world. You know, we've had two protests so far here in Sonoma County. The first one happened on July 2nd in downtown Santa Rosa, and we were protesting. It was called Close the Camps, and it was sponsored and put on by Indivisible Sonoma County, which was formed in 2017. And, you know, they connect with Sonoma County people with their power to influence their members of Congress and other elected officials to keep their government on track. And they were at the first rally. They were there, actually were registering people to vote. And the theme, like I said, was close the camps. And we had about 350 dedicated people there. This Friday, they had another protest around the children being housed in these horrible, what they're calling concentration camps, although in the United States we like to call them detention camps. But a concentration camp is actually a detention camp. It's one of these camps that you concentrate people in. You put them in as a high concentration of people. And they were protesting that. We found out that children were denied a soap and toothbrushes and were crowded into unsafe conditions, separated from their family, subject to cruel and unusual, treatment, which leads to lasting trauma, for heaven's sake, and some dying. I think there's about 6 or 8 children now that have died in these camps in the last 6 months, or dying, with their parents as they cross the Rio Grande. You know, it's just real interesting when you start thinking about the horrors that people are going through to try to get to another country to try to get asylum. I mean, imagine yourself in those positions, you know, trying to leave a war-torn country. Well, on July 12th, the theme for this protest was Lights for Liberty Visual, and it happened Friday, like I said, July 12th. It was 7 to 9 p.m. down in Courthouse Square. Again, it was Indivisible in Sonoma County that organized it. They also had people down there, down there registering to vote and doing all kinds of information gathering and sharing. And you know, there's a website, www.lightsforliberty.org. You can go ahead and go on that site and see what these folks are all about. And what they're trying to do is lights for democracy, for freedom, to do something with these children. I mean, it's, I don't know. I have to say, at the second gathering, there was about over 500 people. But you know, that wasn't enough for me. As far as I was concerned, there should have been 10,000 mothers out there. Why do I say that? Because we are torturing and locking up and separating children from their parents. They don't even know where they're going. They don't know what's happening to them. And from where our understanding is, they don't even have a good system that keeps track of these young people to make sure that they can connect them against, you know, once again with their parents. The reason I say it wasn't good enough for me and there should be 10,000 mothers in the street protesting this is because we have to realize if this can happen to one woman's child, one mother's child, this could happen to any child. And there's no discrimination. You know, all of a sudden the forces come in and decide your child is the bad guy. I mean, what are you going to do? We all have to stand up for the children. The children are our future. They're born innocent. They don't ask to come in the world. We create them and we bring them in the world, and we need to make sure that we have a world that takes care of them. And what are we doing to these young people? I mean, it is very, very sad. And I personally, I believe in karma. You know, I believe in do unto others as you'll have them do unto you. What we're doing to these children, God forbid, I pray it never comes to haunt us that people come into our country and start doing to our children what is happening. So that's why it is very important that we all stand up and say something. Well, I found out a very fun thing that's happening in Sebastopol on June 20th. I'm going to read it. I'm going to read to you what I found out. I just think this is really exciting. You know, in August 2020, we'll be celebrating 100 years since women got the vote. I mean, when you look at it, you know, we thought when we got the vote, we were going to end all wars. We thought we were going to have equality. We're still struggling for the same things. I mean, we can't even get the Equal Rights Amendment passed. I mean, it's so frustrating when you start thinking about it. But here we are, 2020. Women are definitely gathering. And I want to do I was so disappointed when I read the headline to the Press Democrat, our local paper here this morning, when they're talking about our President Trump telling four women of color that they need to leave the country and go back to the country where they came from. They're Americans. I mean, where are they going to go? They're going to leave their country? I mean, come on. I don't understand what's going on, but there's definitely a war against women. But we're coming on to 2020, and there's going to be lots of celebration and lots of awareness. So let me read what's happening when I found out that I thought folks might want to get involved with. On June 20th, there's going to be an opportunity to participate in a sewing circle, actually taking the first step to sewing a flag to celebrate 2020, which will be 100 years since women got the vote. Here's what the press release said. Those that are interested in participating in the sewing can drop by the Luther Burbank Experiment Farm Cottage at 777 Bodega Avenue in Sebastopol. The event will run from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on the July 20th. Participants should bring their own needle and a pair of scissors and a thimble, they said, and thread and material, fabric, is going to be provided. It's hosted by the West County Historical Society and West County Museum. So once again, that's June 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at 7777 Bodega Avenue in Sebastopol. And I guess the best place to find out, I don't have any website, but if you go to the West County Historical Society website, there's all their information and you can give them a holler. But it sounds like fun sewing a flag for 2020. I mean, that sounds like a pretty, pretty fun thing to do. I mean, people are so creative. It's really amazing. You know, I have another announcement to make. I found another really interesting thing. I feel like I'm a news commentator this morning. Detroit all-girls team wins top prize at prestigious chess tournament. Listen to this. A group of eighth grade girls hailing from Detroit, Michigan, won a battle of the minds on Sunday. Last Sunday, won the battle of the minds on Sunday when they took the gold at the national chess tournament. And these young women from Detroit, they are all women, young women of color. And when I look at them and I just think of what it took, I mean, I used to be a friend with a man by the name of Larry Evans, who was the chess champion of the United States at one time. And I remember watching him play chess. Oh, I thought to myself, this is a complicated game. I mean, you really have to have a good mind for it. Well, here we have this team here in the United States, all women of color from Detroit. The Detroit all-girls team win the top prize for the prestigious National Chess Tournament. What a shout-out. I'm just saying, let's see if we can find some names here. Okay, led by 13-year-old Jada Hamilton, the five-member University Prep Science and Math team earned first place in the under-14 category at the 13th annual All-Girls National Championship in Chicago, according to the Detroit News. So congratulations, and I think it's really important that when our youth succeed, that we actually acknowledge them, let folks know what is going on. Well, there's another thing that I think folks will be very, very interested in, and I definitely am going to be attending. It's the Santa Rosa Democratic Club, and it's going to be their meeting on July 24th. You have an option. You can, for $20, you can call them up or email them, and you can have dinner with the Democrats here in Santa Rosa. But what it's going to be happening at the Veterans Memorial Building at 1351 Maple Avenue in Santa Rosa. And what's happening is there's going to be a voice of her own, women's suffrage. It's a radio type of, it's called a special presentation of the Reader's Theater in honor of the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment by Congress. And it's called A Voice of Her Own, Women's Suffrage. It's written and directed and narrated by Bill Tresick. It's going to be performed by Shirley Bennett, Nancy Hoban, Millie Olson, Bill Montgomery and Chris Rogers, and there's going to also be a PowerPoint presentation given by Janet Reynolds. So for more information, you can go ahead and contact Janet Reynolds. That's Janet, JanetDReynolds at yahoo.com, and they're expecting you to make reservations by the 12th of July. Well, you can still make reservations. What's today? Today's the 16th. Yep. You can go ahead. Go get a hold of Janet Reynolds. But this looks like fun. It's going to be a voice of her own, women's suffrage. Oh, it's really lots of interesting things going on for sure. There's no reason that we have to be bored in this life. Well, let's see what's up now. Looks like we're just about ready to take a musical break, and I'm going to play a very interesting song. You know, excuse me. We've been talking a lot about concentration camps and what's happening and comparing everything that's happening in Nazi Germany, and people are all up in arms because we call them concentration camps. Well, you know, it's really interesting when you look at the history of Nazi Germany. They started out, the camps started out pretty much the way they're starting out now. They had what they would consider dissident. They had political prisoners. It wasn't quite the Jewish encampment just yet. But little by little, it grew and it evolved until finally it became the concentration camps that they eventually did, which were killing machines. I mean, God forbid it should happen here. Well, we're not at that point. We're really not. But we're moving towards it. You know, and what I don't understand, I wish somebody would email me, please, at elaine@womenspaces.com. And let me know what it is with this Republican Party that they are so silent about things that are happening. I mean, I was just listening before to our vice president on Amy Goodman denying climate, that there's any problem. He wouldn't even commit himself. He went down and visited all these young children. He saw what was going on, and yet he just stood there and looked at it like, oh, I see. And then he ends up praising all the guards. I mean, what is going on? Where is our humanity? We call ourselves a Christian nation. On our money, we have one nation under God. Who's God that would allow this? I believe in the God of love and compassion. I don't know about you folks. I mean, I believe in a higher power, the great creator, whatever you want to call it, this great mystery that we all live under. Why are these people so silent? These are children. These are human beings. And they're under our watch, and they're being treated like that. I mean, we are losing so much respect across the globe. I mean, it hurts me. It pains me. I love my country. I love what we stand for. I love our Constitution. I love our Bill of Rights. I mean, when you read the Declaration of Independence and you realize what these people were stepping out and trying to do, you know, we can't just allow these things to just help us fall apart, so to speak. So we have to stand up and be counted. That's why I said at the beginning there should have been 10,000 mothers at every protest across the globe. In fact, I'd like to do a call out. Let's do a call out. 10,000 mothers each city, each state, to protest this vile treatment against these young people. I mean, and what are they doing? They're running away from countries that many, many of our parents and grandparents ran away in their day and came to the United States for refuge, for freedom. We can't allow this to happen anymore. We really can't. I know I sound a little bit passionate about it. I'm a great-grandmother. I mean, God forbid that baby would be torn from my granddaughter's arms, for God's sakes. Anyway, enough of that. Getting a little bit too passionate. Well, excuse me, we're going to take a musical break. And I have played this song so many times that it's heartbreaking to me every time I bring it out. But it's so appropriate for today's world. It's a song called By My Silence, sung by Ellen Bookstale and Nick Anise. And what it is, it's based on a poem by German Lutheran pastor Martin Neumler, and he was from 1892 to 1984. And the poem that he wrote, it was about the cowardice of the German intellectuals following the Nazis' rise to power. You know, and this was his protest, and this is the poem he wrote. And just listen to the words, because it's so true in today's world. That's what's so frightening. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me. And there was no one left to speak for me. And then they came for me. And there was no one left to speak for me. Think about that for a moment. Just think about that. First they came for the immigrants. And I'm no longer consider myself an immigrant. So they're not going to come for me. Come on, folks. We have to pay attention. We are Americans. Our flag stands for freedom. Our Statue of Liberty stands for acceptance of the down and the trodden, and give them an opportunity for freedom and opportunity. Anyway, like I said, we're going to take a musical break, and the song I will be playing is, just makes me feel so sad, By My Silence, sung by Ellen Bookstale and Nick Adam. And when we return, I will be talking via the telephone with Dr. Harriet Fraud. Dr. Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York, and she's a well-published author and written about the pressures of families and the economics of the United States of America. So here we go, By My Silence.
Not a communist, so when they came for the communist, I held my, minded my own business like a good trusted, the justice was done.
I didn't ask what was the crime, it was their sadness. For my silence, give my consent. I am not Jewish, so when they came, the
choose, I had nothing to say. Branded with stars like cattle in boxcars and then taken away. I didn't ask, what was their crime? It was their sadness, was in mine. I didn't care where they were sent. For my silence, I gave my consent. For my silence, give my consent. I didn't care when they came for the unionists, came for the socialists, took the poverty. I'm not a terrorist, I'm not an immigrant, I'm native born,
faithfully ignorant.
I didn't care what was their crime.
Till their sorrow turned into mine. Their sorrow turned into mine.
Well, I was okay, 'cause I was a citizen.
And I was free.
I didn't care. Now there's nobody there, no one to speak out for me.
At the time I believed, it never happened to me.
I didn't know
what it meant. For my silence to give my, for my silence to be my consent. For my silence,
give my consent.
Oh my goodness, whenever I hear that song, By My Silence, I Give My Consent. Again, it was written it's a kind of acknowledging a poem by German Luther pastor Martin Neumüller, and it's, first they came for the socialists and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me. Very powerful poem, and is is important today as it was way back when it was written in the 1940s. Well, welcome back. For you joining, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. And I want to remind my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, the board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest joining me on the phone all the way from New York, and it's an honor to introduce her. I want to introduce Dr. Harriet Fraud. Welcome, Harriet. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Well, I'm afraid I can't.
Oh, we're trying. We're having a little technical difficulty here. Hello?
Can't transport it over.
Well, we're having a little bit of a technical difficulty, and while we're having this difficulty, I will go over a few things with you. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm very, very excited to announce that I've been on the air now for 5 years, which is amazing to me. And Dr. Freud,
on this phone, but not over the,
what's that?
I can have her on the phone, but not over the this.
How can we get her on the phone?
I don't know. It'll come through good.
Let's see. Let's try. We're going to try something. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty here, and Ken is trying to work it out. You know, it's interesting. You know, Ken, I think while you're trying to work it out, Ken,
bring you in.
Ken, Let's play the third song. Let's play our third song. We have a third song that we'll play, and then when we come back, we'll be able to talk about what's going on with the...
we're going to have a song, and then we'll put it on.
We're going to have a song and see what's going on here. I'm really sorry about that. Well, I'm going to play this. The next song I'm going to be playing is called Imagine, and I swear, I am so lucky. I found such a beautiful, beautiful rendition of it. Actually, before we go into Imagine, we might play that later if we still have a technical difficulty. Let's go ahead and talk about and let's play Pale Moon, sung by Becky Hobbs. After we play that song, you know, if we can't get Dr. Fraud on the phone, well, we're going to have a little discussion about this particular song. So let's go ahead. Let's play that second song, Ken. What is the meaning of life? Well, hopefully, keep your fingers crossed. We've got our technical difficulty. Here comes the next song. Are you there, Harriet?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good.
Okay, we can hear you now. I'm so sorry we had technical difficulty.
Well, I'm glad I'm here and you are too.
Well, I just love the song. What did you think of the song that we played? Did you hear it?
No, I couldn't hear it. because of the technical difficulties.
Well, I'm so sorry.
You know, I'll hear it another time.
You know, hon, we're live, and it's just. I mean, this is so symbolic of everything that's happening in the world today. So welcome to Women's Spaces, Dr. Harriet Fraud. And before we begin, may I tell my listeners a little bit about you?
Sure.
Dr. Harriet Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in private practice in New York City. She speaks regularly and writes about the insecting crisis in the U.S. relationships, personal life, politics, and economics. She was a founding member of the Second Wave Women's Movement and has remained an activist her entire life. She appears regularly on the radio for Economic Update, the Julianne Forleone Morning Show, MK Mendoza, and, of course, Women's Spaces. It looks like you're becoming a regular here, and we just love having you. Her very latest work appears in Knowledge, Class and Economics, Marxism Without Guarantees, and she is a founding member, like I said, of the feminist movement and of the journal Rethinking Marxism. For 40 years, she's been a radical committed to transforming U.S. personal and political life. Boy, that's a big thing, and welcome, Harriet. Anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, that's enough. I hope we can get right into the meat of our discussion.
Well, first, just before we start, just give me 2 minutes. You know, tell us, go back when you were a young woman. What was the inspiration that got you to start moving in this direction?
Well, I think it was that my father had a sense of social justice. And although he didn't relate to me very much, he did give me a whole string of books. And I was a very early reader about people who had been marginalized and who fought back, and people I hadn't known of at that time, like Chaim Solomon, a Jewish man who was very active and very important in the American Revolution, or the usual people like George Washington Carver and Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth. And also, I lived in a lot of different homes when I was little. And so that I got to know what an outsider feels like, and I've always identified with those people who don't really have a place in this society, who are not welcomed in the same way, and who don't fit in the usual ways. So that helped me a lot.
So then after that, what was your involvement? Did you go to school? Was there a mentor? Was there somebody that just turned you on? You said, oh my goodness, this is what I need to start looking at?
Well, what turned me on at various times were different things. What turned me on in high school was a Jewish group that picketed temples saying, get the money lenders out of your temple. We picketed the temples of slumlords, pointing out the contradiction between the stated values and the actual practices of members of the congregation. That wasn't very popular at those temples. And later, it was desegregation turned me on, and the movement at the lunch counters turned me on, and I helped to organize a sympathetic boycott of Woolworth in Vermont, because I was a college student at Bennington. And then when I got out, my sister sent me a pamphlet called Notes from the First Year, which was notes from the first year of the women's liberation movement in New York City. And I said, well, we've got to have this here in New Haven, where I was living. We're doing this. And we did. I got 5 friends together, and we started our first meeting. And before long, we had 100 people in the room, because it was time that women were waking up and wanting to be included in the political and economic and professional worlds where we had been excluded systematically.
Wow, what a history you have. That is just amazing. Really quickly, where did you get your confidence to do all this? I mean, when I think of you, you're a petite, beautiful woman, and I think of you all of us in organizing all this. Where did you get your confidence?
I think it's because I was a voice of social justice. It wasn't just me. I wasn't self-conscious, because I was the voice of something a lot bigger than me.
Well,
and it gave me lots of courage.
You know, I can totally relate to that, Harriet. I mean, and somehow when you have that voice, when you start speaking out against injustice, somehow something goes through your body. I don't know, the confidence just really builds. Well, one of the most important things about today's show, that especially, like I said, you know, I let my listeners know I am so blessed that I'm able to have Dr. Fraud as a regular here on Women's Spaces. But she just attended a very, very interesting forum. It's called the Left Forum. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. So, Harry, give us a little background. I mean, I think when anybody hears left, you know, they start trembling. Oh, my God, is it socialism? Is it communism? Are they going to take away my house? You know, explain a little bit. What is the Left Forum and how did you get involved?
The Left Forum has been around for, I guess, 50 years. It used to be the Socialist Scholars Conference, and then it became the Left Forum. And what it is progressive ideas of all kinds. It welcomes all kinds of progressive initiatives. And it's a big conference, usually has about 4,000 people in New York City, having discussions and workshops and giving talks and panels on a left perspective. And what I address is a very neglected aspect of the left. At the turn of the century, there were 200 experiments in changes in personal life, often religious, like the Shakers, but others too. They were trying to figure out a way to have egalitarian families, to bring up children in a way that did not stress their subordination to the omnipotent adults, and also to allow women equality with men and joint care for children and sharing of everything. That was the cooperative movement. It died out, mainly, but it was very, very powerful. And what I am talking about, which the left has neglected since that period, is the family and personal relationships, which are in a free fall in the United States. What was the expected family is no longer there. Dating doesn't lead to marriage or children. The most common development in married people is not having children. They're just too expensive. And people don't get married the way they used to. The majority of people between what they call prime fertility age, 18 to 35, are not married in the United States. And the right wing keeps saying that they have family values. Meanwhile, they work against everything that makes family possible these days, which is equal wages for women, paternity leaves and maternity leaves, family leaves, paid vacations, so that the left has ceded the whole area of personal relationships and family to the right wing, which makes those things impossible. The kind of family that's possible with right wing ideology is what was the fascist family. In Nazi Germany, women had to work outside the home in order to live, often up to 60 hours in munitions factories, but they were still left totally in charge of the home and children, and were supposed to serve their husbands. And birth control and abortion were banned because they were supposed to be breeders.
Wait a minute. So during that time, now that's very interesting, because that's what they're trying to do now. They're trying to get rid of abortion. And I mean, when they say no birth control, I mean, I'm thinking of these young kids at the border. I mean, we have so many children we can't even take care of. And now they're saying that we have to bring more in. I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. How do you make sense of all that stuff?
Well, it's a right-wing program. It's right out of Nazi Germany, where women were in charge of kitchen, church, and children. Kirche, Kuche, and Kinder, and where they were forced to work to live up to 60 hours a week, but they were paid about half of what men got because their real, quote, mission was the home. And they're trying to pull that in the right-wing agenda for women. That's why the red states with that agenda have many more divorces than the blue states. The one with the fewest divorces, the state with the fewest divorces, is Massachusetts, which has the most available abortion, birth control, family vacations, family leaves, paid vacations, and other benefits that actually help parents. You know, this is a time across the world where women have to work outside the home. And unless we get help, our families are impossible. And 80% of divorces are now initiated by women, because it's women who don't want to come home after a full day's labor outside the home and then do all the housework and the childcare and socially connect their husbands to relatives and friends and arrange and organize their children's lives.
And be sexy.
And do the emotional work. It's too much.
And be sexy and wear
and
beautiful
at the same
clothes.
Time, be gorgeous and sexy. And meet men's sexual needs. It's too great a burden. So it's women who are rebelling. That's 80% of the divorces.
Wow, that is amazing. Well, let's go back to the Left Forum. You know, one of the things you're involved in, you were very involved. You know, you're one of the organizers. You also involved, organized several panels. When I looked at the list, there was one panel that really struck out to me, and it was called the Double Jeopardy panel. And I thought maybe you could go a little bit into that, because I think that also addresses some of the family needs. Is that true?
Absolutely true, because the double jeopardy in my presentation is the jeopardy of needing to advance out on in the workplace, because you can't really count on a man's support, not because men are so selfish or anything, but because men's wages have frozen for 40 years. They can't support dependent wives and children the way they did in the 70s. And in the 60s, and between 1820 and the 1970s, that was the kind of family you had for white people. Black people always were forced into work because their men, black women had to work because their men never got family wages. But for whites, who used to be the vast majority, that was the case. It's not the case anymore. Capitalists have outsourced millions of jobs to places where there's cheap labor. Lordstown, Ohio just closed its automotive GM plant, where workers who were skilled workers were paid $30 an hour plus benefits, and moved them to Asia, where people are paid $3 an hour with no benefits and no ecological constraints. That's 4,000 people out of a job. And what are their families going to do? But, you know, these changes have happened, and the United States didn't have the kind of militant labor movement that prevented that. That's why they haven't exported German workers' jobs. The German metal workers just got a contract for 22 hours a week work for full-time pay, because they needed it for personal and family and work balance. We are so far from there.
22
All the Scandinavian countries don't allow outsourcing, but we had a weak labor movement, weakened by the McCarthy period, where they threw militant socialists and communists out, and the movement was decimated. And now, you know, they used to have 35% of Americans were unionized. Now it's 6%. So we don't have that militancy. That was another reason. And so, you know, families can't stand up to this. And men who think that they should be taken care of full-time by women who get home from work and are already tired are making demands that women can't meet.
Well,
they leave. Or they don't get married in the first place.
Let me throw something else in here. What I'm seeing lately, more and more and more, is a fervor around all this religious stuff. You know, they're saying that Trump was chosen by God, you know, and you hear Mike Pence talking about, you know, going to save the...
Can you speak louder, please?
Pardon?
Speak louder.
I'm not hearing you.
Oh, I says we're being inundated with all this religious stuff. you know, like Trump is that he's chosen by God. Billy Graham Jr. made that statement. You know, I don't understand what is religion playing at this particular time, especially when you say at the Left Forum, what was some of the discussion around that?
Well, there was a lot of discussion because particularly it's important to remember that Falwell, who started that moral majority movement, his adoration from Trump really traces back to an incident. And it should be remembered that at his university, you are not allowed to wear straps that are not 2 inches or more wide for women, that you're not allowed to ever have sex before marriage, that you're not allowed to discuss birth control. There's all sorts of constraints, and that you have to be properly covered up and dressed. Well, Falwell was in danger of being caught. He and his wife were at a resort in Florida, the Fontainebleau Hotel, with topless optional at the pool and a big nightclub scene. And they hooked up with a man named Grande to set up and invested $3.8 million in a nightclub for gays, where there was a big sign on the door, no politics and no religion, right? And that was a major scandal. And Cohen, who was Trump's go-between, organized to suppress that story in exchange for devotion to Donald Trump and support for Trump in the election. So some of it has to do with naked corruption and compromise on the part of these leaders who espouse a kind of puritanical morality and live very differently.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, when you hear these things, you just have to laugh. I mean, there's more truth than truth than one can imagine. Well, you know, back to the forum, which is really fascinating to me. What were some of the other workshops that you organized, and why did you think they were important?
Well, I organized a plenary. I didn't organize it, but I was chosen to give a plenary. And that was on...
What's a plenary? What's the difference?
A plenary is where you talk to the whole conference. So if there's, you know, 4,000 people at the conference instead of a smaller group, like 50 people or the most 100 people in a room, you're talking to everyone in the group that wants to hear it. And so it's a much bigger event. And we talked about new developments on the left. For example, a woman named whose last name was Jimenez, a 23-year-old who's a digital organizer for the Sunrise Climate Movement, talked about organizing young people on the net, trying to get them to see the connection between the climate and not having a planet in which to live and grow up. David Harvey, the very famous geographer, talked about the importance of being right out front socialist and not making any bones about it because our capitalism is collapsing. Then Kali Akuno, who's from Cooperation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, they have a socialist mayor, and they're making a cooperative economy, an economy of all co-ops. And he talked about that experiment as another development on the left. And I talked about the need for the left to get involved in a family private life program and what that would mean. So these are all, you know, we were chosen from among people who had given other talks at this conference because we were talking about what's left for the left to do. And by left, we mean everybody who's not just going along with the same old, but who sees that things are in terrible trouble and is looking for alternatives and finding different alternatives.
You know, it's so interesting, Harry, when you think about it, the propaganda that goes on, that people are so scared, you know, when they hear the word socialism. You know, I try to soften it a little bit. I try to say, you know something, let's not think of it. Let's just forget the word socialism. Let's think about social programs. Let's think about social programs that help children. Let's think about social programs that help you, that help you have a better life. I mean, we had many during Lyndon Johnson's. I mean, to me, during Lyndon Johnson's reign were the most interesting. We had these great social programs at the same time this horrendous war. I mean, it was almost like we had two sides of the coin right in front of us, asking us the question, which side are we going to stand on?
Right.
And I stand on the side of social programs. Why? I want to see a healthy nation. I mean, why? I mean, I can't believe that people say poo-poo to Medicare for all when all we're saying is let's take care of everybody's health. I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, a person, I mean, that you, if you have a health condition, someone has to call up and say, is she eligible for this? I mean, my daughter alone is paying $3,000 deductible on her insurance, and she still has to get approval for every little sneeze. So it just doesn't make sense why people are so resistant. Did they talk anything about the media and how the media is keeping people down?
It does, and I think people don't realize Medicare is what they're talking about. Head Start is what they're talking about. Unemployment insurance is what they're talking about. These are social programs, and socialism is more social programs, and that all our allies, whether it's Germany, who's doing the best of Europe, or France, who's doing well, or any of the Scandinavian countries, are providing for their people. One of the reasons that Swedish women who are single mothers get 98% of what men earn in Sweden is because they have social programs. They have priority in housing. They have amazing maternity and paternity leave. And this isn't so far out, because the United States is one of four countries that doesn't have paid maternity leave. Here's the company we're in. The other three are Swaziland, Somalia, and Papua New Guinea. And then there's the United States.
Papua New Guinea, I never heard of it.
Yeah, it's a tiny place. But, I mean, really, and poverty-stricken in Africa. So what are we talking about here? When we say socialism, we're not talking about what the Soviet Union used to be. We're talking about social programs.
Exactly.
That are everywhere else in all other developed countries of the world.
I guess we're afraid. I guess we're afraid to live. You know, Harriet, I'm looking at the time, and it's amazing how it runs. I'm so sorry we had this technical difficulty cut us out a little bit. What I'd like you to do for the last remaining minutes that we have here is, what are some suggestions that came out of the forum that people can do individually? I mean, for myself, I feel the most important thing right now is people have to show up in the streets and say that they are totally against what's happening to the children in these cages. I mean, this is just so embarrassing to our country. I personally feel very, very embarrassed. What are some ideas they came that just ordinary people, everybody listening to this show, what are some things they can do? I know we can vote. What are some ideas?
You can sign petitions. You can join groups that oppose these concentration camps and caged children. You can support candidates that oppose the treatment of refugees as criminals, when we are a nation of refugees. The only Americans who are here first are the Native Americans, who are treated the worst. Donald Trump himself, his family are German refugees that changed their name so it wouldn't sound German, from Drumpf to Trump. I mean, really, we have to talk among ourselves. We have to sign petitions. We have to go on demonstrations. We have to support candidates who address these issues and other social issues, and not allow the right wing to dominate, because they can buy our media. You know, we have to understand that when our jobs were exported, huge corporations made enormous profits overseas, came back home, and bought our media and a lot of our politicians. So we have to support those politicians who are running and debating now, who don't want concentration camps in the United States.
I know.
And who want a progressive agenda that actually helps families and children.
And I think one of the most important things they can do is not listen to hate. Like, for example, this morning I read in our Press Democrat that our president of the United States is telling four elected officials in Congress that they should go back home to their country when they're all American citizens. I mean, we can't listen to hate. Don't listen to hate. Whenever you hear hate, you say, oh, wait a minute, there's something not right here. Would you agree with that?
Totally agree. Because that kind of hatred creates a hierarchy where some people have rights and other people don't, where some people are superior. That's what Megan Rapinoe is fighting against and the Women's Soccer Foundation and the women's soccer team, that we're equal and we have to be given a chance. That's why she stands up during the national anthem in honor of Black lives that matter. We can't allow the kind of hierarchies that turn us against each other. So we have to fight hate. And Fox News is a hate station, except amusingly enough, when they interviewed the people in France when the Americans won, they went into a bar interviewing people, and they were chanting, F Trump. F Trump in the back, which was very funny. So that was on Fox News by a total accident. But, you know, we have to stay away from all of that hate and affirm that we're people together.
Well, Dr. Freud, I'd like you to give your websites. We're having a little technical difficulty again. I'd like you to give your website and any last words that you'd like to share with our listeners. And also, I want folks to know that everything we talked about today will be on the website at www.womenspaces, so not to worry. So your website, Dr. Fraud, and any last words that you'd like to say to our listeners.
It's H-A-R-R-I-E-T, H-F-R-A-A-D. .com, HarrietFraud.com or HFraud.com is my website. My podcast is Capitalism Hits Home, which you can get on my website or on Democracy at Work or on Google or on YouTube. But, you know, and what I would say to people is don't let our country be taken over by hate.
Thank you so much, Dr. Harriet Fraud, for giving us such a wonderful interview. You've been listening to
the woman in your life. She can wait so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, July 15th, 2019.